Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Today, then, we pay tribute to one of our favourite players in recent history as we chat about Stuart Dallas. It's Dan, Michael, and Rob here on The Guide, which is brought to you by Levi Solicitors.
You sounded surprised then.
Trying to add a little bit of suspense. Yeah, make people think, oh.
Yeah, it's Levi's.
And then you can shout, you shit bastard.
I do it at the low fields. I go, people go, oh, and I go, wills, probate, conveyancing.
Is that right?
And then I give a little round of applause.
Hey, hey. Does everyone around you cheer?
And then I did a backflip.
Yeah. Levi'sListers.co.uk/thesquareball. Get yourself a 10% discount on your legal fees. Take me to Dallas, baby. We go back to his signing in August 2015. He's been around a long time as old Stuart Dallas, hasn't he? Yeah.
Stuart Dallas 1.0.
He looks older there than he does now, to be fair. I didn't realise he looked like a tramp when we first signed him.
The beard care was not the same, was it, back in 2015? I think
it's quite hobo chic, is that, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit very, well, it's not, it's more than a bit scraggly looking. It's a disgrace, to be honest, Stuart. Get yourself sorted out there.
Mm. In terms of loving Stuart Dallas, I love Stuart Dallas because of his story arc where football is concerned and the idea that he's come off a building site to play sort of low-level amateur football and then has just sort of climbed the ladder as he's gone. I think there's a lot of romance in that. It reminds me of when Vinnie Jones obviously signed for Leeds and he was a hod carrier, was Vinnie, wasn't he? He used to move bricks around on building sites and he made it as a footballer just about, then on to Hollywood. Maybe Dallas moved on to Hollywood after this.
Well, I did see a quote from one of his amateur coaches saying it's a good job he's a footballer because he was a terrible joiner. So it's worked out for the best for Stewie.
Yeah, so... When did he start? So the 2015 season is that Juve Rosler time?
Yes.
It's all blurred in my
mind.
Who
had been his manager at Brentford before then. I don't think I knew much about him when we signed him. It was just like, oh, all right, Brentford are an all right sort of team. Rosler knows him.
Did I think at the time, that seems like a reasonable signing?
Yeah, I seem to remember it was a fairly sensible signing in as well. You know, over £1 million. Oof, at that time, we'd gone like a decade without spending any money, more or less. So it was a modest but sensible seeming sort of an investment.
Brentford had reached the playoffs the previous year as well. And Dallas, the key point about him, which sort of generated a bit of excitement, was that he was a winger, which we'd sort of done without the previous year. We'd either played a midfield diamond, which Dave Hockaday absolutely definitely wanted to do and wasn't told by Massimo Cellino, and then Oliver. Winger options when Redfern came in were Sam Byram and Charlie Taylor, who were fullbacks. So the fact that we'd signed a winger, it was like, oh, cool. And Rosler was going to play heavy metal football and this was the future.
And he did try it for about 2 weeks before he was sacked.
Straight into the team then as well.
Yeah, just 4 days after he signed, played against Burnley, 1-0 draw. I think he was subbed off in the second half and it was Antonucci actually came up with our goal. And yeah, it was kind of quite clear from the start that Rosler's football maybe wasn't as heavy metal as we were expecting.
What is heavy metal football? I remember the cover we did at the time. It's a really good illustration on it. And it says said heavy metal
quite
football.
Quite a dystopian looking thing, wasn't it? But, yeah. Jürgen Klopp on it was basically the gist of it was high pressing, high intensity.
Running the referee.
Yeah, that sort of thing, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Rosler, I seem to remember it's never been terrible under Rosler. It was a bit like Stuart Dallas's early days, actually. It was like, you couldn't point it and say, this is awful. But equally, there was not much that stood out about it either. It was just like, okay, well, we'll see. I think under a different chairman, Rosler probably gets, 20 games to have a go at this rather than, was it 7, I think he got in the end? Or
he had a couple of months, didn't he?
Yeah. There were quite a few draws in there, weren't there, which you can you can spin either way, can't you? You can Jesse Marsh it and say the metrics are actually going the right direction here. These are going to all turn into wins soon enough. But yeah, it was never really happening for him.
Unlike his great mate Liam Cooper, coming into Leeds at a time of great indifference, it was the 15th place years, wasn't it, of the chaos of Chelino. Everyone was quite tired. First season, scored his first goal in December, 3-2 win at Wolves, ended the season with 5 goals and 7 assists in his 45 games. Yeah, finished a high mark, 13th. That's not 15th, is it? Under Steve Evans.
Dizzy heights. I've still got Uwe Rosler's unread autobiography at home because I bought it thinking I'll read that. And then a couple of weeks later, we sacked him. I was like, probably won't read it now.
Fickle bastard.
I'm less interested in Man City than I was before, as it turns out.
Well, can you remember what your sort of early impressions of him were back then?
It's just fine.
Yeah.
Was it? You wouldn't be excited if he was in the team. You wouldn't be disappointed if he was. He was just like, all right, yeah, Stuart Dallas is playing. Fine. He'll go up and down doing standard winger stuff. But he was never a winger who had a trick in him, particularly. Like, he would never be nutmegging fullbacks and he didn't have a huge amount of pace either. He was kind of quick without being able to burn past a fullback.
I think we still associated wingers with Robert Snodgrass and Max Gradle at that point, who were both kind of really tricky, skillful players, whereas Dallas was kind of a grafter. There were signs that he was a talented footballer. He scored a great goal at Birmingham, a winger where he sort of flicks it up and volleys it in. And he did win Player of the Year at the end of the year, but that almost felt a little bit like default, almost. Like, I think Charlie Taylor won Player of the Year, and the other nominees for that were like Antonucci, Lewis Cook, who was Young Player of the Year, so it felt like we could just give him everything. Mm-hmm. So he was clearly our best player. So Dallas was like, yeah, he works hard, he's not the worst player kind of thing. But yeah, he wasn't really the type of player who would get fans off their seats, I think.
He was very much in his 6 out of 10 era, was Dallas, which he would later go on to be like a consistent 8 out of 10 every week. But he was like, he was just fine. But then again, the team was just fine. There was nothing going on around him to suggest that any of this was ever going to turn into a promotion push.
And that moderate amount of goals, like I say, 5 in the first season, it kind of dropped off as he went into something. He drifted into a bit of a wilderness, didn't he, really, after that?
Yeah, there's a bit of a trend where he became less and less involved. So in the following year, yeah, his appearances go down and down and down. 49 in his first season, 41 of which were starts, 35 in the second, 24 starts. And then by the time of the Thomas Christiansen season, it was 32 and only 17 starts. And yeah, he'd started to become a bit of a utility man then. He would start to play fullback under Thomas Christiansen, which I think was mainly because all our other fullbacks were terrible. It was Cameron Borthwick Jackson.
What's the competition there, though, Rob? Tell us.
Yeah. Cameron Borthwick Jackson and Vernon Anita.
Who I'm sure was a midfielder in my mind.
Well, yeah, it's the typical Leeds United thing where we're not actually allowed a left back.
They were like, he was signed as midfielder, it's like, but he can also play a left back. But then it turns out he's not very good at either.
The appearances actually did continue to drop off even into Bielsa's first season. So he's gone from 49 to 35 to 32, down to 30 with only 13 starts.
It's interesting now, because that Bielsa season, nobody really knew where Dallas fitted in, because I think we'd all accepted by that point he wasn't a winger, but he'd not really turned into the fullback or the central midfielder by that point. And yeah, I found a piece from a press conference at the start of that season where Dallas did make a start, and Bielsa was being asked why he started ahead of Tom Pearce. You think, wow, how times have changed quite quickly.
Wow. Well, he started 5 games at right back because Luke Ayling got injured, didn't he, there in that season, but then broke his foot, and then that ruled him out for 3 months, which kind of answered the question as, where does Stuart Dallas fit? Well, we don't have to think about it anymore.
I also remember his early appearances at fullback not being very good, and just thinking, like, he's doing all right there as a winger, but you don't want to see him there all the time. Like, he was filling in, but I think there was a game away at Blackburn where he got taken apart a little bit, and it was almost like, well, this isn't a long-term option, clearly. But then it developed and you were like, oh, turns out he is our best fullback and also our best central midfielder. It's just, these were all things you didn't see coming in these early performances, I suppose.
Well, it's mad because the end of that Bielsa's first season, the only reason he was in the team was because Alioski and Douglas were both injured at left back, and we went into that playoffs with basically everyone injured. And then the Derby game happened and it all kind of changed for him, even if it was absolutely awful for the rest of us at that point.
Yeah, that Derby game, if there is a sliding doors moment, that was it for Dallas, I think. He was, as Phil said in a recent show that we did with him, he was one of the few players, the only player probably, to emerge from that game with any sort of credit. He was the one who, it felt like he picked the game up by its bootstraps, I suppose, almost when it was all going against us.
Only to have Kiko Kassir and Liam Cooper grabbing it off him, smashing it on the floor. But no, it was great. And the pictures of the celebrations after that as well are just brilliant, where you can see him in front of the south stand and he's celebrating. And it's like, it's the sort of goal that we would look back on very, very fondly were it not for the bad thing.
All the other stuff
that happened afterwards.
It was fucking wild that night. And it was like, as much as awful as it was absolutely exhilarating.
Mm.
And it was kind of the first time we'd seen like Dallas's personality as a footballer, where he's like, I'm not fucking losing this as much as we did lose it. But he tried his best.
I'm not, but these lot are.
Yeah. It's not my fault anyway.
And we all went away a little bit glum that summer, not quite sure what it was going to bring. And it brought the retention of Bielsa. And Dallas then sets about this as his opportunity, I suppose. He returns to training a week earlier than he had to, which is probably, given how much Marcelo liked work, move, was received well, I think.
Yeah, because it was that summer. So Dallas had been on international duty with Northern Ireland, and the club had said, well, you can have an extra week off. And I think Pontus Janssen was pushing for even more time off, whereas Dallas was like, no, I'm coming back a week early. I want to sort of continue from that Derby game, I guess. And he got the opportunity in the team because Luke Elliott, I think he had surgery or something, but he was injured at the start of the season. So Dallas was playing right back. And again, he was just immediately undroppable. Wherever he had to play, he was going to be in the team.
And suddenly you see that transition from bit part player who we don't quite know how to accommodate to 45 championship appearances, all starts, 5 goals, 3 assists.
Virtually none of them on the wing. Did he play on the wing at all that season? I was trying to think back to it, but I mainly remember him as fullback and occasional midfielder at this point.
Yeah, he'd occasionally play wing back if we had 3 at the back. Mm. But he was, the winger days were gone by then. Albeit he was popping up in the Stoke penalty area as our furthest player forward, getting on the end of Pablo's passes.
And you beat me to it, because I was going to say, of the 5 goals, that's the one for me. That, to me, I think that goal is probably my favourite, or one of, in the Bielsa era. Mm. It's the one that certainly stuck in my mind most, I think. That and the one at Hull that Tyler Roberts finished off. But this one is the one that just kind of, you watched it and you went, oh, because when Pablo plays that ball, and if you actually watch it back, the way that it's been cut together is there is a bit of a close-up shot. I think it's on Forshaw who picks the ball up and lays it off to Pablo, and it's over by the touchline, by the dugout. So you can't see the field opening up in front of you. And then it cuts back to the normal standard football camera shot, and you've seen Pablo slide this ball through, and you're like, oh, that's magic.
There's almost a bit where you think, who's that to? Oh, it's Stuart Dallas. Yeah. There he is. He's run from, I mean, that's what our fullbacks did at the time, wasn't it? It's whether it was Luke Ayling at Swansea or Alioski in the last minute when you were clinging onto a lead. There'd always be someone popping up in the box when you'd be like, bloody hell, where did that come from?
And I know this is sort of eulogising Pablo to a certain extent, but there is just not a better weighted ball that I've seen in many a year than this. It's just absolutely perfect. And yeah, it's Dallas who's done the hard work. Pablo has done the craft, and what a goal. I just love it. I could watch it over and over again. And to be honest, I have done.
Yeah, I was watching quite a few of the Dallas goals, obviously, for ahead of doing this. And admittedly, we're coming off a bad week, aren't we? We're recording this after we've just
lost to Blackburn.
Drawn to Sunderland, struggled to create chances, which admittedly we did occasionally do under Bielsa, but you don't remember those. You remember the footage like this, where you're seeing the movement and the pressing and the quick spreading of play from one side to the other, and the fullbacks coming from nowhere, and you're like, oh God, it was so good. I think you said before we recorded this, can't we just go back?
Yeah. Trying to go back and live it all again.
Yeah, I do think we sometimes forget that a lot of the championship under Bielsa was still a slog, but then you do see highlights like this back, and you forget that it looks like we're playing football on like double speed.
Mm.
It's ridiculous. It's like the highlights have been on fast forward.
Yeah, the first touch, the decision making, and that's what I suppose I'm getting at with this Stoke goal. Every decision, every movement, every pass within that, just, oh, it's just chef's kiss, isn't it? It's perfect.
The goal he scores against Charlton behind closed doors as well is a really good example of the pressing as well, because Harrison actually loses the ball, but no sooner has he lost it as we've won it back again, and then Stuart Dallas in the box and is scoring. The speed with which we managed to turn everything over in that period, it felt like we were in the period then of just being loads better than other teams. We could just bully them physically and with skill. We would just be like, no, we'll have that back and we're going to score now. So just, fuck off.
Especially as that was the last game of the season. We were already up by that point and all the pressure has lifted. It was like the Derby away game, wasn't it? Where we just turned up and absolutely...
Is that the one where Ben White scored as well?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. He was the only player who hadn't scored, and he scored that that volley, didn't he?
Mm.
Which was a perfect way to end the season. But what can you remember what other goals he got during that season? We've got them listed here on the sheet.
So yeah, he'd started to play central midfield a bit at this point, and he got an equaliser against Preston on Boxing Day.
Was that the home game?
Yes, which was a bit wild.
It was a real grind, was that, yeah, wasn't it? I remember.
And that was quite a late goal.
It was deflected, wasn't it? Yeah.
It still looked really good.
I can't remember why, but I was in the cop for that game, and I was really low down at about goal level, and it went in just in front of me. But I just remember it feeling like an awful day. It was
an 89th minute equaliser, was that?
He also scored what we assumed would be the winner in the 5-4 at Birmingham, but there was still plenty of madness still to come. I think that was to make it 4-3.
Which goal? Was it 4-3, that one?
Yeah, and you sort of thought, well, surely we've got this now. We're not going to make this any crazier than it has to be. But there was still a sting in that tail. And the equaliser against Luton after lockdown, which again felt like another big goal because we'd had that little wobble at Cardiff.
Mm.
I think we had beat Fulham, but then it was a bit like back at Elland Road and it was like, oh no. Are we going to lead this?
That again? Was the grind, wasn't it? It was a proper grind that game again. Yeah. Was that Nathan Jones, I think, as well?
God, was he back there then? I can't remember.
I think so. It was one of his many spells. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, though, to, I suppose, reflect on that period, he's now remembered as just a load of glorious wins. Wasn't really. Because of that period of coming back after COVID, there's a defeat at Cardiff, there's a draw against Luton, there's a win against Barnsley that feels like complete torture. There's lots of bad bits in it too. So we shouldn't just go, oh, it was amazing, wasn't it? We were just blowing teams away.
It's like looking back at relationships you had when you were like 18 or 20 and going, oh, wasn't it great?
I remember that argument we had that time on that train. Oh, it was good. let's remember the bad bits. Is that what we're saying?
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction. And free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
He was named the player's player of the season for the promotion season, and rightly so, I think. To be voted by your peers as well.
I was going to say, I think it means probably a lot to players to receive this as well, because it's, I suppose there's a tendency for the flashier players to be awarded player of the year awards, because, you know, you just go, oh, well, Pablo did loads of cool stuff, or Somerville keeps scoring goals, so they tend to win it. But yeah, to be in a team of grafters, the biggest grafter is some accolade.
I didn't expect it, to be honest. You say it's the one everyone wants to win, but for me, it's not about that. Without them, it's teammates. It's not possible. It's a team game. What we've achieved is unbelievable. This is for everybody, not just me.
And he did enjoy his promotion as well, which was nice. Him singing the Mind the Gap, Thomas Frank bit and all that stuff. It was all part of just the atmosphere of kind of getting to rub it in people's faces for once, wasn't it? Was that?
The photo of him on holiday. Doing the no wins in London, no problem. He looks absolutely levered. It's brilliant.
And there was that doubt, I suppose, post-promotion. Is this sustainable in the Premier League? Can we do it? Can these players step up? And they answered that question absolutely terrifically, all things considered, didn't they?
In what was, on reflection, the only vaguely calm season we've had in ages, because it was comfortable from about beating Fulham, wasn't it? Whenever that was, everyone was like, we're staying up here. it's going to be good. It's going to be fun. We can actually enjoy this.
It was weird though, because I remember when Dallas started playing central midfield in that promotion season, it still felt a bit like, oh, this is weird. Like, how Stuart Dallas ended up as a central midfielder? But then we went up and he was just like the best midfielder in the league. It felt like he ends at 8 goals, 2 assists. And obviously the high point is that Man City game.
Yeah, the games that you are referring to there, the pair of you, the Fulham game came off the back of a little bit of a wobble around February. We lost quite a number of games. There was like 4 out of 5. We lost Arsenal, Wolves, then we beat Southampton at home 3-0, lost at home to Villa 1-0, lost away to West Ham, and then went to Chelsea. Sorry, we played Chelsea at home rather and got a 0-0 draw. And then suddenly it sprang back into life, didn't it? And this was the thing that kind of got us over the line. It was beating Fulham away 2-1, Sheffield United at home 2-1. And then Man City away, the one that nobody ever saw because it was going into that run, if you remember, of Man City away, Liverpool at home, Man United at home, and we didn't lose any of them.
I mean, the Man City game is, it's a mountain to climb at the best of times, isn't it, going to Man City? But to have gone there and be down to 10 men for like a full half of a game, it is an impossible task, you would say.
Yeah, it's absurd. It's beyond all reason, isn't it?
You could probably play that game. I mean, we undoubtedly rode our luck in it. I remember watching it, it's like they're going to score. But then I always feel like that watching Man City. I watched them last night against Real Madrid, and throughout the whole thing, you're going, they'll score eventually. And fair enough, they got one, but they went out still, didn't they? It reminded me a little bit of actually watching us sometimes. We've got so much of the ball here in such a dangerous area the whole time. We will eventually score, but that was just a game where we managed to hang on and hang on and hang on, and then you would think at the point we're reaching that game at 0-0, no one's getting forward. You're just holding on, aren't you? But then out of nowhere, probably took them by surprise because Man City had settled into a pattern of it's just us attacking and attacking and attacking.
Well, I was going to say, because I knew we were recording this today and I watched that Man City-Real Madrid game last night, and you saw how Real Madrid, if you did watch it, you'll know this, were basically trying to catch him on the counter and running from deep, playing balls over the top and running from deep to try and catch him out when they were bothering to attack, that is. And it's a similar sort of thing, isn't it, really? It was just the deep run when they were pushing forward and we just caught him on the hop.
Jude Bellingham's no Stuart Dallas, is he? He scored a good goal. Was it the first half? We scored from the edge of the box? Because this was his second on the charity walk last summer. I can't remember what day it was, but it was towards the end of that day and I was knackered and I decided to listen to Strings for Yasmin, and I was just thinking about this Dallas goal for motivation, and I basically nearly ended up in tears as we were coming into Halifax or whatever.
Tired and emotional.
Yeah, it was a long day.
The match stats for this game, Man City had 71% possession. They had 29 shots, 7 of which were on target. We had 2 shots, both on target. 9 corners to our 3, and fouls were pretty much in the balance there. It was Liam Cooper who got sent off, wasn't it?
It was that
first half. He caught Gabriel Jesus's knee, was it, I think? And it went to VAR, and VAR sent him off. And while you kind of saw it and you went, oh, I sort of see it, it was an accidental, wasn't it?
You can see why it was a red.
Big Cooper.
Yeah, he's got one in him, hasn't he? But equally, it's fine. Because he did get the ball, didn't he? Did he?
it was ball first.
I've got a feeling he got the ball, but then it's dangerous, isn't it, on the follow-through. So, you know, whatever. But it adds to the legend of this game anyway. Mm-hmm. Weirdly, if that doesn't happen, the rest of the game doesn't pan out like this, does he? So, you know, Stuart Dallas has got a lot to thank Liam Cooper for.
And that moved us up to 9th in the table with 31 games played, 45 points on the board. I seem to remember we still didn't feel safe and secure, did we, even at that point? Even though Fulham were the highest placed team in the league at 18th in the relegation spots. 26 points they had. We were 19 points clear of them, and I'm fairly sure we still didn't feel secure. And you laugh at it now, but because you know how hard points are to come by in the Premier League, and goals are how hard they are to come by in the Premier League as well. So I think with a little bit more experience under our belts of what happened in the seasons after, knowing what that struggle is, it was amazing, wasn't it? And undoubtedly the high watermark in the Premier League.
I mean, you say goals that had to come by in the Premier League. Bielsa did describe Stuart Dallas scoring twice as an anomaly, which I thought it was a bit harsh on him. But he did say it gives me great happiness for him because he's a player whose game is based on a lot of generosity. This year has allowed Dallas to show a part of himself that we didn't know he had, which I think nobody knew he was that bloody good.
So his final season at Leeds. And this, I suppose, if you're going to try and romanticise what has been an awful ending to his career, I'm pleased almost that Dallas hasn't faded, if you know what I mean. Like, we've started to get annoyed with him for some reason. Like, I think people are just on the cusp of that with Liam Cooper a little bit because he's not been as effective in the Championship. And we saw it with Luke Ayling a little bit where his star faded a little bit. At least Dallas sort of went out at the same time as Bielsa, almost, if you ignore that nasty last bit with Jesse Marsh.
Yeah, I see him very much as with, just with Bielsa's team. He kind of, he goes with that because he doesn't have to be associated with the relegation, does he? Because he was not there for it. Not really.
And that final season, it does have the nice moment of Rafinha scoring a stoppage time penalty against Crystal Palace, and then Dallas walking over to him at full time and grabbing his bollocks and shouting the size of them while Rafinha looks quite startled by what's happening, which was lovely.
I mean, it is always an eye-opener when that happens. It always is.
Mm. Is that, I suppose we had, who was the youth coach we had who went in for the biting of the bollocks that time when he was, when he was a player?
Paco Gallardo.
I was thinking, is it a British thing that you kind of go around like smacking each other's ass and grabbing bollocks during football? No, it can be a little bit that way.
I was taking that as a rugby thing.
That's more the piss drinking, I think. Is that more when you get into the fluids? Is the rugby union, we should say.
But yeah, God bless you, Stuart Dallas. It was great, wasn't it? And I think the sort of older you get, the more football you watch, the more philosophical, I suppose, you become about it, and you realise that all things in football are kind of fleeting, aren't they? But we had some good times, and we'll always remember him fondly. We say Derby onwards. Maybe we'll say the season after.
But in some ways, though, that the fact that it come from nowhere is, it's a very rare sort of a trajectory, isn't it? That you're at a club for, as a senior pro, not as a youth player, but you're at a club for years doing sort of nothing. Kind of, I suppose Calvin Phillips maybe slightly drops into this bracket too, but he was a young player at the time. But had a couple of years in the first team, and people were like, take him or leave him, whatever really, to all of a sudden cementing your place as like first name on the team sheet. Everything revolves around him. To have gone from, it's more of a surprise, I suppose, that he was able to do that.
But there are elements of that in all the key Bielsa players, aren't there, really? When you look at it, it's almost like it was him.
there was magic for a few years.
I always group Dallas with Cooper, Ayling and Click. It's that kind of quartet of players that hadn't really worked out. Well, maybe not Ayling, it hadn't worked out, but he had failed a lot and, you know, Click's been sent out on loan and Liam Cooper. And then they end up finishing ninth and they're all absolutely integral and just fucking ace in that team.
So Stuart Dallas, all we can say now, I suppose, is good luck in the post-football life and enjoy your retirement. We'll see you soon.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.